Hello, and welcome to the Project Good podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Hilton. Project Good is a social impact podcast interviewing experts and advocates about the pressing problems that we face globally and hearing how they suggest we move forward in the future. The Project Good podcast is brought to you by Project Good Work. The goal of this podcast is to inspire people and organizations to develop a mindset that can move others to positive action regarding complex social issues facing people and the planet. For our special edition for April, we're returning to Eden. According to World Counts, a data insights organization, if the planet continues to operate its global food system in its current state, will run out of food in 25 years. Starting in 2022, many consumers saw the increase in food prices at the markets and in restaurants. The prices have been caused by several factors, including war, upticks in production costs since the pandemic, and the demand due to a growing global population. The current mass farming practices are not allowing time for natural replenishment, and an overhaul of the system is needed on the micro and macro levels. To combat these unnerving trends, many everyday people are looking into growing their own food and cultivating their little bit of green at home to hopefully curb costs at the checkout line and bring health back to their bodies and community. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Matthew Mayhus, an award-winning author on a mission to make a greener world and a healthier place. A popular gardening coach, his book, 12 Universal Laws of Nature, How to Use Your Land to Its Full Potential, walks readers through nature's secrets, learning how to develop a gardening blueprint, and how to create a low-maintenance, high-impact garden. Matthew's passion for cultivating the earth has enabled him to reach people around the world, bringing them back to their roots as humans, and encouraging people to lead the way to revitalize the planet. Let's get into the interview. Gardening has seen a resurgence in popularity. People are experiencing and increasingly recognizing the physical and mental health benefits of gardening. It provides exercise, fresh air, exposure to sunlight, which can improve mood and mental well-being. Additionally, growing one's own fruits and vegetables encourages healthier eating habits. As climate change and environmental concerns become more pressing, people are turning to gardening as a way to reduce their carbon footprint. Gardening allows individuals to grow their own food locally, reducing the need for transportation and packaging associated with store-bought produce. Concerns about food security, particularly in light of global crises such as the COVID-19 pandemic, have prompted people to take gardening as a means of ensuring a steady supply of fresh produce. Growing one's own food provides a sense of self-sufficiency and resilience in uncertain times. Our guest today, Matthew Mayhus, who is a co-founder of Polonia, a landscape architects company with a mission of offering competent services to create a sustainable ecological outdoor spaces where people and nature are in harmony. Matthew, who leads the company, can be found designing beautiful gardens, educating landowners on the best use of their properties, teaching a growing online audience about gardening, and being an activist for the planet. Matthew believes that it is vital that the people on the planet should be educated on how to keep our earth green to preserve our humanity as we know it. Welcome, Matthew.
Well, thank you, Anne-Marie, for your amazing introduction. It's an honor to be on your show. I'm very excited about this interview with you today.
Very excited as well. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, gardening and food. For obvious reasons, who doesn't love to eat and enjoy cooking? And then, of course, I get excited just to be outdoors and you just feel so at peace, and it's always been something that I'm in love with. You can't go wrong. So I am so excited to talk today because, you know, we are facing interesting times. You know, as I mentioned in the introduction, if we continue doing the life that the way that we've been doing as a global society, we are essentially endangering ourselves as humans. And what I mean by that is, you know, our own survival in a healthy way so that we don't have to be looking at life in these apocalyptic type of movie scenes. And so I wanted to kind of first, you know, before we jump into this critical discussion, I always like to ask everybody one fun question. And so my fun question for you is that if you had to pick a place on the planet to create the perfect garden, where would it be?
Yeah, that's a lovely question. I've been actually looking at some places in South Africa, and as it turns out, there is a province that's called Eden, which is on the garden route, and the nature there is just amazing. And yeah, I think to have a farm there one day would be really cool. Yeah.
I guess it would be the perfect place, being that it is named Eden. And for those who, you know, obviously Eden has its religious background, but Eden itself means paradise. And so, yes, I think, you know, just what I do know about South Africa is it's such a beautiful and diverse place, even though it is all the way at the very bottom of Africa.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually want to jump into there a bit, because what I found interesting is that from the religious aspect, we were kind of banned from the Garden of Eden. And I think we should actually return to it, because we have the ability to create our Eden, or even our heaven on earth, here and now. So I think it is time for humanity to step in and take up that role.
Yes, I agree. I agree 100%. One of the biggest things that we are facing, though, everybody is kind of, I guess, for lack of better terms, freaking out when they hear these statistics, like, you know, 25 years. You know, 25 years sounds like a long and short time, depending on where you are in the age range. You know, 25 years could be a blink an eye for you. And then, you know, we might end up, you know, fighting in the streets for an apple. I hope not to be, because sure. Unfortunately, as long as, you know, nothing tragic happens to me, I should be around at that time. So I hope not to have to be planning, like, you know, how am I going to get this apple from my neighbor in the future. And so I guess let's start speaking with about the first question is, like, what are the long-term implications of our intensive, like, monocultural farming practices on soil health, water quality, and ecosystem stability?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And to answer that, I think if we look at the research that's being done about how big a role humanity has had on our, or how big an impact humanity has had on our environment, on our whole planet, then it's quite shocking and sometimes scary about where we are heading. But one hugely important aspect that is forgotten in this whole studies that basically make predictions for the future is that if we keep doing what we're doing today, whereas there's huge opportunities to turn it around, and it can be done so quickly. Like, there's even evidence that if half of the farmers would get into what is called regenerative farming, so it's a way of farming that is more in harmony with nature, where you're actually storing vast amounts of carbon into the soil, that we can actually get to pre-industrial revolution levels of carbon dioxide within 7 years. So we could basically resolve climate change within 7 years if we take the necessary action. And another beautiful part of this is really that when you get into this way of producing food, it's also way better for our personal health, because this is obviously a very big topic today, is that all of our food is kind of poisoned with a lot of chemicals. And even if you do it right as a farmer, let's say that you are organic, you'll still have residues in the soil from old times. So it's really, really important to step up and to go beyond organic, to go regenerative and restore the health of the soil. Because if we can restore the health of the soil, the microorganisms are actually going to break down most of the chemicals. And obviously this needs some time, but whatever we do today will have like a huge impact on the future. And then one other thing that I would really love to point out to is that I'm mostly scared of the paradigm that we are living in today, where everything is very negative and doomsthinking, and that is for me the biggest. This is actually the biggest problem or the biggest challenge, is that if we think that we're going to head into like a doomsday scenario, then it might actually happen. We have to believe in a future that is good, and we have to believe in a future that we as humans can be intrinsically part of nature. And yeah, I think that that is hugely important to change the paradigm. And one way of doing that, to the audience, or this is something that I'm practicing because I'm very susceptible to what the news brings out, is to not watch the news that much, or just not watch it at all. And I, because you go out with friends and you meet people, you'll still have the most important news will still get to you in some way or another. Just putting off the news is one massive thing, because as it turns out, is that because we are humans and we used to live in caves and we were part of nature, we were very wary of bad news, not so much wary about good news. So that is why the news agencies or all of the news is focused on negative news, because it gets more views and then they get more sponsorship from commercials and everything. It's just good news doesn't sell that good because of our human nature. So there's also nobody to blame, to say, you could get into like, oh, it's the fault of all the news that they're bringing all that bad news, but it's just the way things are. So it's your personal choice to get into that and become more conscious about it. Yeah, so I think that is hugely important.
Yes, and you talk about I would say it's the number one most important factor, and people, I don't know, I guess they never really think about their own personal impact. I guess if you're like somebody, in a high government position, or you're a celebrity, maybe you are thinking about your impact on a regular basis. But most people, I think, are not thinking about their individual impact on the planet, because they just think, well, I'm just, a number in 8 billion. And so, I'm like a little I guess you would say drop in the ocean. But, we can't, the thing that I always emphasize is that we can't really think that way, because it's all these little drops that are contributing to, the larger problem. And so I guess I love your suggestion of like limiting time at the in the news. And then I guess what would you say is another suggestion that people can, work to reframe their mind? Like, what should they feed their minds with? Sort of like, since we are talking about gardening, how should people garden their minds?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that people can do, like either within your current job, you can actively change and take up a role that will have a higher purpose. This is something that I highly recommend, because if you're in a job that you're not liking, then it will be very difficult for you to enjoy life and to see a higher purpose. So finding your own purpose, and it doesn't necessarily have to be related directly to improving the our planet, because I see so much value in all the people that I work with that help me with, for example, accounting, other people that love doing things that I don't like to do at all. That's their purpose in life, and they're helping me to get to my goals. So I think just finding your own purpose and trying things is very important. Then if you're really ambitious also to become a good gardener, it's really about educating yourself and learning what to do and how to do it, because this is a thing that I talk about quite in depth in my book, is that nature has been working in a certain ways for millions of years. And if you can understand how how nature works, you can take that knowledge and apply that in your garden. And you might not consider this, but then you're always going to be frustrated and you'll see weeds in your garden, and it's just like you're kind of fighting against nature. Whereas if you change that mindset and get educated on how to do it, then you'll actually enjoy it so much more. And you'll have a huge impact with that way of gardening that is lower in maintenance. It's healthier for the soil. It's healthier for your plants. You have healthier food. So it's pretty impressive that once you make a shift in a certain direction, the ripple effect of good effects is insane. I'm always amazed about how quick things can go if it's done right. Yeah.
Yes, and so having that foundation of a purpose, I think, is extremely important in just life itself. And I think that is one of the top things that we see when now that we do turn on the news or we do see, you know, craziness happening out here in society is I think a lot of people are lost. Yeah. And they don't know, you know, why their why, I guess you would say.
Exactly.
And so starting with foundations, and since we are talking about plants, the foundation, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, and since you are the expert, but I always think that the foundation of gardening is the soil. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was reading some things from National Geographic and a few other statistic type of sites and things like that about how topsoil is in danger. Mm-hmm. And how the soil itself is being depleted of micronutrients. Mm-hmm. And the soil health itself is essentially becoming burnt out. So can kind of clarify what this means to the everyday person, because you know we're not all living in soil.
No, exactly. That's the thing. Like many people look at soil as just this dirt that's in your garden. It's there, but in fact, it's way more. It's completely different. In fact, how I always refer to it is that the topsoil of our planet, which is mostly around, sometimes it's only 30 centimeters, can be up to 2 meters in rare occasions, which is basically the soil that is alive, where it's full of microorganisms and other animals, worms. This whole area, this is actually the skin of our planet. So even if you have your own skin on your body, it's protecting you, because if you have your skin that is open, like if you have a wound on your skin, then it's going to be prone to have infections. And it's basically the same with the soil. So this is one aspect that I teach in depth also, is that you have to keep your soil covered as much as possible, either with plant material, with planting more plants, using different types of mulches that you have to know which mulch to use in which situation. But just that concept of having the soil covered as much as possible is a game changer. So that's really important. Yeah.
Now, you know, I guess understanding that soil is more than dirt. One of the things obviously that we see and I think that comes like to people's minds immediately is that we see like, you know, there's famines here and famines there.
Yeah.
This is just my personal belief. I think it doesn't have to be that way. I believe that that it requires either education, or if it's not already education, because I believe there's probably people, you know, they've been living there for thousands of years, so obviously the people have survived, so they had to know something about farming, or it's a matter of not being supplied with the correct things or something of that sort. How can we, I feel there, I'm trying to, safely, but maybe I shouldn't safely say, how can places that are experiencing like desertification and deforestation, because what I've read is that, you know, once you get to, you start losing the plants that were essentially holding and feeding the soil, you don't have, the water, you know, I'm not, you know, sure how fast this happens in these regions, but it seems to be quick, but it could be just, you know, what we're told. So how can, I guess, if you were going to give people advice, like, that are in these regions, like, you know, in Africa, in different countries in Africa and places in South America, how would you suggest that they rethink what they're doing there? It's a big question, I know.
I wanted to say it's quite a big question, but I can explain it as good as possible. And one thing that I want to first get into is that the aspect that you pointed out to that there's famines in the world. And obviously there are still, but like there's more than... There's never been that much food on our planet for all of the people that are alive. The famines that are happening has mostly to do with conflicts because of political issues, and obviously climate change is now becoming a bigger impact, has been getting a bigger impact as well. But the thing is that the food that is more than abundantly available is just being produced focused on quantity and not on quality. So how the whole food industry works, it's basically about kilograms, tonnage, pounds. It's all about the weight, and that's how it's marketed. And it's unfortunately, it's not marketed according to the nutritional value. And I hope this is something that will happen in the near future. In fact, I heard about a new technology that will have it can be a scan in your smartphone where you could basically scan an orange and see the nutritional value of that orange just by scanning it. So it's not a picture, it will actually see the nutritional value. And apparently it has something to do with the fact that healthier food is vibrating at a higher frequency than food that is basically not healthy. Because for example, oranges, there are oranges in the market that don't have any vitamin C. So you're buying oranges to get your vitamin C, especially here in this side of the world where the winters are longer. So you're buying these oranges, you're not getting your vitamin C, now you have to get all sorts of supplements. And by the way, supplements is apparently the biggest growing industry in the healthcare system, so it's really an evidence of that the food that we eat doesn't have the necessary nutrients. Now, this all boils down to the health of the soil. Now, how is that possible? In fact, the health of the soil is directly linked to the health of our human body. Now, if we look at the soil from a microscopical level and how it interacts with plants, is that there are nutrients in the soil. Even if the soil is depleted, there will still be some nutrients. But if the soil doesn't have microorganisms, then it's very difficult for the plants to take up that nutrients. And then if we go even more in detail, there's this beautiful symbiosis between the roots of the plants and the microorganisms. So what the microorganisms do is they take nutrients, let's say, for example, phosphor or other minerals, they will change it slightly so that the plant can take it up with its roots, and in exchange, the roots give the microorganisms sugar because the plants are doing photosynthesis, so they can harvest or they can produce sugar, and they give it to the microorganisms. So this is this beautiful system that, like I said as well, this is how nature has been working for quite a long time. Now, the sad part is that once you start to apply chemicals into this system, the microorganisms die. And this is obviously what's been happening in agriculture, even in gardens. It's quite common to use all kinds of pesticide, insecticides. So you're basically growing plants that are not healthy. Now imagine that these plants produce food, that food will also not be healthy. Even if you don't consider that it's poisoned by chemicals, it just doesn't have the nutritional value that it needs. So it's kind of like what I said, a ripple effect in the wrong direction. But if we focus on creating a healthier soil, the ripple effect in the other direction is amazing, because there's a whole set of things that start to get in play if you focus on healthy soil, is that the soil functions more like a sponge. Like if you have a sponge at home, if you hold it under the sink, under the water, it takes up a lot of water and it can hold it for quite a long time. And then when there's too much water in the sponge, it goes through it. So it has both a very good capacity to hold water, but to also to drain it, which will become essential with climate change and extreme weather patterns. This is going to be like a necessity, otherwise you won't be even able to grow food. So in that way, that climate change is actually changing so rapidly, I'm quite optimistic that this way of farming, which is called regenerative farming, or I mean, there's other names, or you could also call it ecological farming, that this will in fact become the only way to produce food, because all the other systems are collapsing. And that's why we also see that fruit prices are increasing in some occasions, because the old system is underperforming. There was like already since 2000 or in the 1990s evidence that if we keep doing industrial farming, then we only have about 80 harvests left, like 80 years to grow food. And that's what you also suggested, that we now would only have 25 years left if we keep doing it in that way. That's very pessimistic, but and I think that it can be changed so quickly. It just needs it definitely needs knowledge and also governance and farmers to get on board to do that. And also people in their home garden can become an advocate of doing that. So yeah, once again, this is key. This is all the key, is all related to the soil.
Yes, and speaking of the soil, and you know, I guess, you know, you're kind of already answering the question that it seems, you know, for these areas that, you know, where you just see that it's turning into deserts, that it really is, I guess, mostly like a political, usually political pull, because I'm not certain, but I think, is it easy, like if you were going to go to these areas that are deserts right now, within, I think you said about 7 years, I guess, is it just about adding the microorganisms to it? Would they just do the work, or do you have to actually bring in stuff, or how do you turn something from a desert into now like, you know, I guess a new oasis?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And to answer that question, we just have to differentiate, and it's roughly done because it kind of is a spectrum. Basically, we have two areas in the world. One is the arid climates of our world, and these are areas that only have limited rainfall in a specific time of the year. Maybe they have two rain seasons, but they'll have more extended dry periods. Now, in these climates, these are basically all the climates that have become deserts nowadays. But the thing is that before they became deserts, they were actually plains, like the plains that are full of grazing animals. And in fact, it was the grazing animals that were sustaining this landscape. Now, because of agriculture already more than 4,000 years ago started, and we started to hunt these animals, that system kind of collapsed. So what I'm convinced of is that in these dry, arid areas, you have to focus on getting animals involved to restore the health of your soil, because it's also just vast areas. Now, on the whole other spectrum, there's the tropical climates of our world, where you just have rainfall all of the time. Usually it's now changing with climate change as well, and basically that's the thing in these arid areas that I just talked about, that if you don't do anything, it turns into desert. But then in the more tropical areas, if you don't do anything, it turns into a rainforest. So it's kind of easier in the tropical areas to restore the health of the soil and to restore the land, because you just have high humidity and high temperatures, so that's easier. So now this is also important that you understand where you kind of are in the world, and then if you want to start, like if you can do it on a small scale, even on a big scale, it's really about restoring the microorganisms and making sure that the microorganisms have all of the nutrition. Usually that's always available in the soils, even if it's depleted. But this is the beauty where we as humans can come in and speed up this process. Because what I believe is that if we take care of nature or not, it's going to take care of itself. Like, we will have like probably a mass extinction if we don't do anything. And then the nature will just restore itself and it will get into a new phase. But we as humans are aware of that, so we can play an active role in avoiding that and actually recreating those landscapes already today. And then one way of doing that is, for example, to get into composting, obviously, is a big one, to basically create all of these microorganisms. Like, compost is one of the best ways to produce a vast amount of microorganisms. Now, then you can even take it to the next level, is to, from that compost, you make a certain compost tea, you add other components, and then you start spraying this on your land, on your garden, and then the effects are just mind-blowing. But obviously, it has to, there's a couple of things, like keeping the soil covered, reducing the tillage, like not turning your soil around because it's like our skin. There's other things to consider, and yeah, it's really about creating a microbiology and enhancing that microbiology by doing certain things. Yeah.
Okay. It seems that, you know, the way that you've explained it, it seems doable. And it just seems like, you know, if a bunch of people, you know, band together, although it's, you know, time consuming, because I was visualizing like, okay, you know, you have to like, you know, put your banana peel, you know, in the compost after you eat it, and, you know, and then, you know, you have to go out there and, you know, put your tarp down. So I'm starting to visualize people doing this, but yeah. it is doable. And one of the things is like, I know, of course, you're doing it, but getting more people out there, educating people about, you know, soil. I think if we if we get the soil like healthy again, then everything else kind of will do its own thing, because, you know, we really don't have, you know, we'd like to think that we do, but, you know, we don't really have control. Like, if it's going to grow, it's going to grow. And if it's not, it's not going to grow. But if we at least put the right foundation, then at least we've, you know, upped our percentage into the positive. So yeah, this is, I feel you've made me feel that this is 100% doable. It just takes manpower and people like willing to like, you know, remember to put their stuff in the right places. And then, yeah. And then I would say, like, you know, give us 7 years to a decade and we can, you know, we'll be heading in the right direction.
Exactly.
But of course, but that's the biggest challenge. And now, before I'm going to transition into, you know, making it a little bit more personalized, I want to talk about urbanization, right? Because one of the things after the COVID, you know, obviously it shocked everyone. And then there's been this talk, I don't know if you've ever heard about like this push for 15-minute cities, that you would get everything that you need within like 15 minutes, and, you know, and everything become kind of densely populated, so that if we ever had like any kind of crisis like that again, it would hopefully make your life more convenient. I'm putting myself even in quotes, because I feel like it's almost prisonish. And since people are going in more, I don't see people probably turning away from urbanization anytime soon. How do we, I guess, within these types of cities that we've set up, start to create, I guess, our own food systems that are going to be healthy in maybe what I would say, usually in urban areas, I don't really think of them as healthy, because you have all the cars and buses and, you know, smog, and people are like practically living on top of each other. So how then can we start thinking about developing these kind of sustainable systems and developing like gardens and health in an urban area?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think I've been pondering on that for a while, but I have this vision that we can actually have everything that is, it's more interconnected. Like, I still believe that cities will stay an important role because it's just, it has so much advantages, and it's also technologically, it just makes sense, like also for infrastructure, for other things. There's so many reasons that a city, that cities work. Like, if you would spread out all of the people that live on all of the cities of our world, well, then it would also have a too high impact on all of the agricultural land, all of the natural land. So it does make sense, but I think that our cities can be just way more greener and designed in a different way, that there's a way better connection between the natural and the built. Because obviously these cities have been built just purely on the sense of putting as many people in as possible, not really considering the quality of life. And so I see a huge opportunity in using those leftover spaces or just creating green urban spaces so that the quality of life in those urban areas become better. And then on the other hand, I also see that what I believe is that the farmlands will kind of go in two separate ways, like the farm productions, and both will go also hand in hand and will sustain our lives and will be perfectly profitable. And I see that one will be going more into the highly technologically bigger scale farming that applies all of the systems about regenerative farming. So that's one area that I see, which will be maybe less interesting for people to engage with, even though the food that will be produced on those farms will be very healthy. But then another area, I think, and this is the interesting part, that some farmers will just decide, no, I don't want to go into that mega scale of farming. I want to stay personal, and they will focus more on the community aspect of food and the educational aspect of food. And this is something, yeah, we've experienced that on our own farm of my brother and my father are running the farm, that they decide, or we decided to go in a different direction, to stop focusing on scaling, because my father started the farm, he had two cows. He started with that, it then became 300 cows, so it grew, yeah, very fast in 40 years. And he had to do that because this was the European Union kind of, you had to become so specialized and so focused on one thing that it became a monoculture system. Now, when my brother started farming, we kind of started shifting that because we were like asking ourselves, like, for who are we producing food here? Like, it's not authentic. We don't see the consumers. So we started shifting the food production more towards quality and more towards community. So now, 7 years fast forward, the farm has become a community center. There's a big field kitchen. There's every weekend people come and enjoy the gardens. Like, I've designed all of the gardens around it, and it's just having such a positive impact on the biodiversity as well. So these farms I see can become basically community hotspots where food is really celebrated. And it's just as a visitor that, let's say you live in the city, there's a electric self-driving car that brings you to this farm, and you can enjoy time with friends and family, and then you just get back to the city. So I see that mix really happening. Yeah.
So now that we've talked about that, and I love that you kind of gave a real life experience with your own family farm experience, because I have been, that's another thing that I've been reading about, is farmers are having such difficulty in not only making profits, but then also not being able to essentially do what they wanted to do, like being forced almost. It's like you have an assignment, like you will be an almond farm, you will be a meat farm, you will be, and it's not, in the past, I know farms had a little bit of everything, which then, I'm not a farmer. I do have parents that were farmers, that, when they grew up on, farms, but I know, like, having the past, having that diversity actually, you know, helped make everything healthier. Like, you know, you do a little bit of chicken, a little bit of beef, and a little bit of, you know, beans or something. Yes. And so now I wanted to kind of shift to, I guess, would be the everyday kind of person, and go along with your book as well. I want to talk about gardening for your everyday soul, and how they can start to get overwhelmed by the whole gardening process. Like, obviously, I haven't met anybody, but I'm sure there's some weirdo out there that doesn't like running through a garden. I find it sometimes, you know, I stick to basics and don't get too complex of anything that I plan to grow. And so I find it intimidating when people are, you know, doing, like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I grow olives, and then I grow tomatoes, and then, you know, and then I have my flowers. So how can we, as regular folks, start out if we have a piece of land, and not, like, freak out, like, how am I going to cultivate this and make this into a garden of my dreams? Where should people start if they want to grow a garden?
Yeah, I love this question, and I'll reply this question by telling a more personal story, because when I was about 3 to 5 years old, I obviously grew up on the farm, but the farm was really about cattle and bigger cash crops. I said, like, to my parents, I want to start my own garden. I want to grow my own food, because at that time I had an amazing school teacher where we learned a lot of things from about plants. And I got totally inspired by it. Obviously, also growing up on the farm, I was just amazed about the fact that my father would sow seeds on the farm. And if you put a seed in contact with the soil, it grows into a big plant, in some cases even to a big tree. Like, that first lifetime realization was just mind-blowing for me. So I said, like, I want to get this garden, this vegetable garden, up and running. And I just begged my parents to get me like a piece of the garden or from the farm. Eventually they gave me a piece, and I said, okay, nice, now I'm gonna prepare the soil, because my grandmother had informed me already about compost and some things that you have to change to the soil. And just to give you an idea, this farm is actually situated in the north of Belgium, which used to be part of the ocean. In 1200, like in the medieval times, the sea was pushed back by dikes and building rivers. So this whole area, it's very fertile because the ocean was coming there, but it's extremely hard soil. It's pure clay. It's like the highest clay content that is possible in the world, because it's basically pure clay, which means that if it dries out, it becomes like concrete. So I had already a hard time preparing the soil, because it wasn't the best soil to do vegetables. But then I eventually started with radishes, and I can really recommend to anybody who wants to start his vegetable growing journey is to get some radish seeds and just seed them in an area of your garden, and you'll be amazed how fast it grows and how after a couple of weeks you'll have some radishes that you can enjoy to eat. So I did that. For some reason, this was my first experience, and I had an early success, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. I know how to grow vegetables now. So what I did is, and what maybe other people would do, is I just continued to buy all kinds of seeds. So I went to together with my father, and I bought tomatoes, lettuce, everything. Like, I was like, I want all of it. So, and then I just came back in my garden, prepared the soil, and then I just seeded everything everywhere. And I thought, like, this is so easy because I managed to do it with the radishes. It will work with all the rest. So, but then you can obviously know what happened next. Like, after a couple of weeks, after I returned from maybe a holiday at my cousin, I was like, oh, nice, I'm going to go to my garden. It will be full of vegetables. But then obviously it's just overgrown with weeds. And like with big weeds, because we also added some compost to the soil, to a soil that was already rich. So it was just overgrown by weeds, and I was devastated. I was like, wow, how is this possible? And then actually from that day on, this became like a guiding part in my life, that I really wanted to understand how nature works. And then that's how I actually want to tie it back to your question, is that if you want to know how to do it, you have to learn it. So I spent over 10 years doing all sorts of research, studying. I studied landscape architecture, obviously, learning about biology, learning about gardening, farming, all these aspects. I brought it all together. And now I also teach it in a program which is called the Masterclass, The Garden of Your Dreams, where you learn all these aspects, where you like know what to do, how to do it, and why to do it, because it's really important that you understand it. Because if you just say like, oh, you should do this and then you should do that, if you don't understand why, you'll forget it and you'll not be able to see it evolving. Because if you work with nature, it's not like a static thing. It obviously changes. There's some other issues that come up. So you need to put in some time and resources to learn how to do it. That's really key. But if you want to start small, just get some radishes and then you'll have some early success. And yeah, that's I think the most important aspect. And then also, like, there's, but again, it really needs the knowledge. I mean, you could do it on your own. You can start experimenting it, and you will eventually figure it out after reading tens of books and making I took way more than 10 years to understand it, but it will take you a couple of years to figure it out. So this will also cost you time and money. So it's really worth it to listen to people who have the knowledge and then apply it in your own garden. Yeah.
Now, I have one practical question. What would you say are some starter tools that every new gardener should have?
Yeah, this is a really cool question. I think the most important garden tool, and I'm going to make a video about this as we are getting into the spring here on my social media, that is it's called the grilli net, or the garden fork. Like, it's a tool that was invented in France, at least the one that we use, which is very solid. And it basically has several long dents of about, let's say, 20 centimeters. And what it does is that it can decompact the soil without turning everything around. Because this is a huge misconception, because obviously we've been plowing land since the invention of agriculture. But plowing the land is, now that you understand that, you're basically killing the soil or destroying the soil by doing that, is that this tool makes, you put it in the soil, you wiggle it, and it decompacts the soil, and then it's ready to be planted or to be seeded or whatever you want to do. And this is really important as well, back related to the microorganism, because the research that is now coming out is mostly done by the Food Web Institute, by Dr. Elaine Ingham. She's like basically the godmother of soil knowledge. And they found that on each inch or each centimeter of the soil, there's different types of microorganisms. Like, on the top layer, there's more oxygen in the soil, so there'll be a different type of microorganism than in the layer below that. There's a whole other sort of microorganisms, and it just continues to go down, and there's all different sorts. Now imagine these microorganisms being layered in a specific way and living in a certain area. Obviously, they're like microscopic. They're so tiny that if you then turn the soil around, they're just like, it's as if you would demolish a whole housing area and then expect that the people who live there can just live there. So this tool really helps to avoid turning the soil completely around. And it's, I recommend it for vegetable, like annual vegetable growers, and also for people that want to plant a new garden. It's a really cool tool.
You made me smile when you were talking about demolishing people's houses for the microorganisms.
That's a cool way of looking at it, right? Like the whole food industry is we're destroying all of their houses all the time, and we expect to get good food from them.
Yes. Actually, I had a discussion a couple weeks ago that, as we're looking at, all these health conditions that people are facing, and then also, obviously there's this mental health crisis around the world, and then people are, overweight. There's, all these things, and all of this can just be contributed, a lot of it to what we're putting into our bodies, a lot of people just eat junk, but then they expect to be, happy and healthy. Mm-hmm. And now we also, as we've been doing this discussion, know that if the foundation is weak, being that the soil, then how can we expect for a population to be mentally, physically, and, I guess we could even go to morally healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So, I want to jump in there because this is something that I didn't explain yet. It is that, in fact, I think that the reason there's so much mental issues in our population is directly linked again to the soil. Because, eating processed food, that's an obvious one that is just bad for you. But this is becoming already a common knowledge, and people are definitely stepping back from it. But then again, if you say, from now I'm going to eat healthy food, even the food that is considered healthy, like salads and oranges and all these things, they're not necessarily healthy for you because they are produced in a way that didn't consider the health of the soil. So they won't have the minerals, everything that you like. And then what is also proven is that in those foods that are extremely healthy and that are grown in a way that really respects the soil and even builds the soil, that it's also full of these microorganisms. And now, as it turns out, is that in our gut and in our brain, there's vast amounts of microorganisms that help sustain the function of it. So it is now also proven that if you are a gardener, like let's say if it's really difficult for you to get to the access of that food, if you grow your own food in your own garden and you do it in the right way, then you get your own healthy food. But on top of that, it's proven that if you put your own hands in healthy soil that is full of microorganisms, that these exact microorganisms will be absorbed through your skin and they will directly improve your gut health and your brain health. These are obviously, the gut health is a big topic nowadays. Leaky guts are increasingly common, which then leads to most of the common or let's say most of the modern diseases such as diabetes and cancers. So being a gardener and putting your hands in the soil is actually gonna save you, and it will save you a lot of money on your healthcare bill as well.
I didn't know that the soil was, I knew obviously it's potent for developing food, but I didn't realize it was so potent as it would go through your skin. But I guess just as our episode is called Return to Eden makes sense, if we come from the soil, putting soil back in, even on the top, that makes logical sense.
Yeah, exactly. And then one other thing I just want to put in as well, if it's even for people to do this, if this might be difficult, I really encourage people to go out into nature and learn about nature, but just be in nature. And that's also proven that in healthy ecosystems, the air is just full of microorganisms as well. Like if you can touch trees, the moss, the leaves, it's full of those beneficial microorganisms, and it will improve your health. And this is actually a common practice in Japan, which is called forest bathing. You basically just go out, walk into the forest, and just notice how much better you'll feel. Yeah.
Wow, I love that. Now I want to talk about something that is fun and actually was the one of the things that drew me to you and wanting to interview you. Is I love art, and I love that you have incorporated such beauty in how you do your landscaping, because of course, you know, when you started out in landscape architecture, and you still do that. And so you make these beautiful gardens that I have looked at on your site, and of course, in seeing your social media. And so I loved it. And so let's talk about designing gardens. What are some of the things, I guess, let's have a little bit of fun we can do with, you know, the practicalities, and then maybe some things that are trending. I'm assuming that there's trends that come and go in gardening.
Yeah, I think, for me, that's a really difficult question to answer, that trends and styles and all these things, because for me, what I do with my one-on-one clients, where I design the garden and we make sure that everything is done from A to Z, basically, the whole package, right? I start with analyzing the land. And this is also what I teach in my gardening class, is that you have to start looking around, observing. This is like the first step, like, don't even do anything. Like, I spent quite a lot of time just being in that place, observing, making pictures. And then I don't even have directly the ideas, but then I gather as much as information as possible, anything. Also, having a conversation with the client is like so important, like, because a garden and the way you want to experience nature or gardens is can be different for each and every person. So we spend a lot of time as well going into a dialogue and really understanding what's important for you. And then after I gather all of that information, I basically come home again to my office. I have my big drawing table. I print out a plan as big as possible, so I have a whole overview. And then I put in more analysis aspects, like I start drawing what's already there. And then at some point, when I'm thinking about all the information that I gather, maybe starting a vision board with pictures of things that I like or materials that I like, I then basically get into a certain flow state where my pen starts to draw, and I kind of, it's a really interesting creative process where the design kind of comes to me in some way. It might sound weird, but I get into that state, and like I have chalk paper, like a special paper, that a tracing paper, and then I can just draw layers over layers, and it's a really creative process to get to the best possible result. Yeah, and then I present that obviously to the clients, the whole process as well. So it's that there's a continuous communication between me and the clients. Yeah.
Yes. So I like that. I like your key is like talking to each person and talking to them about how do they want to experience nature. And of course, that's very individualized. And you actually brought up, I don't know if you've been ever to in California, up in the LA area, they have there's the Getty Museum, and they have a really very cool, like, circular garden that has like a water center, but then it has like a bougainvillea that go around it, and they use a lot of I guess you would say stuff that is, because we're living in California, some drier plants and things, but it becomes kind of like an art piece, of course, because it's at a museum, but all coming with plants. So I always love that garden, because it's just, it's a little bit different, and it's just, you know, a little bit unexpected of things that you would have in California.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's an amazing aspect about gardening that I didn't even talk about, is that gardening is probably one of the very few ways that we can bring culture and nature together. Obviously, farming is also culture in a way, but it doesn't have that art aspect to it, even though I think we can bring both worlds together in farming and gardening. And I for me, the border between what's nature, what's gardening, what's farming, it's getting increasingly fluid, because I love to look at projects holistically. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that it's an art form where we can connect with nature.
Yes. And so this leads me then to talk about your 12 universal laws of nature and how to use land to its full potential, your book that you have out, your award-winning book. So I wanted to get some highlights from you about the book. I guess, first of all, what made you want to write this book?
Oh, yeah, this is interesting. I never really thought I would start writing a book, but it kind of came to me. Like, each year between Christmas and New Year's, I take 1 or 2 days off. I go into the forest, into nature, like kind of no internet, just by myself. And I start writing. I look back at the past year and I start making some goals for the next year. And then out of the blue, this was in 2022, so end of 22, start of 23, I somehow wrote, I want to write a book. And then from there, the idea was born. And I really wanted to focus on writing a book that is not necessarily only about gardening or only about farming. I really wanted to look at it from a bigger perspective, because, and that's why I choose the name of the book, 12 Universal Laws of Nature, because whatever is happening in outdoor spaces or even in home plants, it is universal. It's all of these laws apply in agriculture, it applies in city planning, it applies in gardening. So I really wanted to dive deeper into that. So I start the book with focusing on the 12 universal laws of nature. Like, just to give you one example, the one is called the law of attraction. And this is a universal law that's even known outside of the natural world. So it's just kind of there either way. But what it shows is that, it's also related to the law of vibration, which is another law in the book, is that plants that vibrate on a higher frequency are healthier and they will attract beneficial insects. So there's this whole, it's linked to quantum physics, something that Einstein started to figure out more toward the end of his life, but that kind of everything is connected in a way. So yeah, they found out that plants that are healthy vibrate on a higher frequency, so they will get the good insects, and plants that are unhealthy vibrate on a lower frequency and they will attract the insects that will eat them, because nature works in a specific way, that whatever, there's no waste in nature, it's just recycling constantly. So if nature knows that a plant is gonna die or is just not in a good health state, then the insects will take care of it and they will recycle it, they will eat it. And that's also why in farming and in gardening, having problems with insects, that your plants are being eaten by insects, is because they are not healthy. So if your plant or your salads are being eaten by insects like a lot, it's an indication that the plant is not healthy, and then I wouldn't even consider eating it myself. So yeah, that's something important to talk about the book. So I dive deep into that. And then I go on and talk more about soil, obviously, about water, about other bigger themes. And then towards the end of the book, I also talk in depth about practical things that people can do, that farmers can do. And that's kind of how the book is laid out.
Now, one of the things, I haven't read the entire book, I'll be honest, I got snippets, like I was talking kind of before, one of the things that caught my eye is like a gardening blueprint. because I like to come in with things with a plan. So that's why it appealed to me.
Yeah.
I do know, and I've experienced, I had a friend that I grew up with that was into gardening and, you know, just would like, you know, I'm going to plant this here or there. And so those kind of things, kind of like, I like a little bit of organization and structure.
Yeah, that's good.
So
it's really important to, you need that as a gardener.
Yeah, because I see sometimes when people don't, and it's like, you know, you're walking, it always, I'm going to sound kind of weird, but like, you know, you're walking and, you know, it seems pleasant. And then all of a sudden they have like, you know, it's, you know, you're surrounded by lavender and grasses. And then all of a sudden, for people who are just random, you know, here's the Venus flytrap, and you're like, what? I like when people have like themes or whatever, like, you know, I'm going for, you know, a French lavender and grasses look, or, you know, I'm going for a desert and meditation look. That was one of my favorite things to look at. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I gravitated to things that that I like to focus on. And so if you had to pick out a chapter that I think that you think that everyone should focus on or read, which one would it be?
So that's a really good question. Honestly, I like the way I started the book, because it talks more about my personal life. And this is for me personally. I don't know if the readers will like that the most, because it was just interesting for me to look back and kind of connect the dots. This is like what Steve Jobs said, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. So I saw these patterns in my life, and I was the first time that I really took the time to go through that. And yeah, it helped me a lot to see where I came from and to know where I'm going. So I like that part the most, but obviously it's just full of knowledge, and it kind of builds on top of each other. So there wouldn't be a point to go immediately to chapter 5, because it will just confuse you. It's really like the whole book is made so that when you read it, it kind of, it's like continuous clicks happening in your head. So then you're like, oh, of course, yeah, now I understand how nature works. Oh, yeah, yeah, and now I see how I can apply that in my garden. And now I understand better why things are working in a certain way. So that's what I want to give the readers, like to read the whole book and think like, okay, I now actually know what I can do, how I can do it, and get out there and change the world. Yeah.
All right. And your final question, this one is to get people to start taking action, because you got me excited when you explained everything very practically, that we can turn everything around. So what is something that you could think of, anybody, it doesn't matter, you know, where they are, in a city, in the country, in a third world country, or, you know, just anywhere. What is the first step they can do to start preparing us to return to Eden?
Yes. So, yeah, I think it's just, if you have no clue about anything, it's really about getting into the area of studying it, understanding it. So then there's ways to do it, which is like reading lots of books, which will take you a lot of time. But then getting around people that know or have done that experience will actually save you time and money. So that's an important one. And that is why I actually want to offer the people that feel like, okay, I really want to get into this and I really want to take action, as like to your special, especially to your audience, I want to offer them access to my Calendly link. So it's an application that you go onto and you can go into my calendar and you can book a 30-minute exploration call with me, where we look at your specific case about your garden and see how you can actually bring it to the next level. So that's something that I want to offer for free. And then, yeah, I think if you want to start slower, you can read my book. Obviously, reading the book will just be good as an add-on anytime. And then there's also my website, where you can have a look at which is www.thegardenofyourdreams.com. And there I've put up a library of a couple of videos that will give you some tricks and tips that you can apply immediately in your garden, such as like talking a bit about berries that you can use in your garden. So simple and easy steps to apply immediately there. So that's it. Yeah, you can go to the website of my book. There's some more information. So it's 12 Universal Laws of Nature. Sorry, no, it's 12 Universal Laws of Nature.com. Yes, exactly. And then, yeah, you can find me on all the social media platforms and find out more about me there as well.
Fantastic. Thank you, Matthew, for your time and insight. If you'd like to learn more about Matthew Mayhews, go to polonia-la.com. If you have a passion for an unserved community, a social justice problem, or simply want to change minds, contact Project Good Work at projectgood.org to start your project of change today. It is that time again. We're preparing for our upcoming Changemaker Conference in September. To find out more and to register, go to changemakerconference.com. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in to Project Good, where we're focused on what matters.